You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to The Profile podcast. God calls us to use our influence to share his love and goodness. For some, this is in leadership. I'm Andy Peck, and for the past 19 years, I've been interviewing Christians to find out how to lead better. Taking the initiative isn't always easy, so I hope you'll benefit from this latest conversation. The Profile podcast is brought to you by Premier Christianity magazine. Subscribe today and get full online access and the print magazine every month at premierchristianity.com.
One of the key challenges for any full-time church leader is how to enable others to lead who don't currently lead, and how to improve the leaders currently in post. I've chatted with many pastors over the years who know that they could see their church do so much more if only they could get more lay leaders involved. And this is doubtless true too in charity and commercial sectors, finding the right people to take initiative that will drive the mission forward. Well, I'm delighted to be joined by Matt Hogg, who works with a charity that has a reputation for helping churches equip and enable leadership within and outside the local church. The charity is CPAS, Church Pastoral Aid Society, and many of their resources, such as the Growing Leaders Course, have been used by many churches. Matt himself has the title of Leadership Enabler, and so I look forward to learning more about how we might create a culture that supports and equips leaders. So great to have you on the show, Matt.
Andy, it's so great to be here. Thanks so much for having me. Really looking forward to our conversation.
Great. Well, Matt, you cut your leadership teeth, so to speak, serving as a curate at Holy Trinity Brompton, which, as many will know, is the home of the Alpha Course. But also many see this as a flourishing church planting and revitalization approach. And you move from there to St. Alban, Fulham, not so far away geographically. Presumably those experiences helped shape your work today. What were your key learnings in that season?
Well, thanks, Andy. And it was such a privilege to work at HTB and plant a church in the network. It was an incredible time. And actually, I was a student at HTB and on staff not long after I graduated in the early 2000s, while Sandy Miller was vicar at HTB. And in those early years of the 2000s, I started working in the prayer department, working with an amazing guy called Jeremy Jennings, who had wrote a book after he saw an article in the paper with the headline, "The Church on Its Knees?" And it must have been, that article must have been in response to some stats or research released at the time. And the paper was picking this up, and something in his spirit said, "That's not the problem, that's the solution. The church on its knees, the praying church."
Right.
And corporate intercessory prayer, at the heart of the local church. So I was part of a team that helped mobilize corporate prayer in the church. And you asked me what was a key learning that shapes my work today? Well, prayer is foundational and fundamental. Prayer, Spurgeon says, isn't he, the slender nerve that moves the muscles of omnipotence. Prayer changes things. Prayer makes a difference. And a praying church is often a church that is expectant for growth, expectant for the kingdom of God, and expectant for lives to be transformed. So prayer, but also evangelism. And of course, you'd expect me to say evangelism and come from a place like HTB, the home of the Alpha Course. But you remember that the Alpha began as a discipleship course, and people were getting saved on it. And it was developed and worked on by Nicky Gumbel into what we now know as the Alpha Course. But being in an environment like that and seeing people come to faith in Jesus through Alpha taught me a number of things, really. That evangelism is God's vocation for the church. John 20, Jesus says to his disciples, "As the Father has sent me, I am sending you," which reminds us that God is a sending God, and that we are a sent people. We're commissioned by Christ to be a disciple-making community, caught up in God's mission to his world. Was it Moltmann that said, "It's not the church has a mission, but the missionary God has a church." And in the Anglican Communion, we try and capture something of this in the five marks of mission, with the first mark being the proclamation of the good news of the kingdom. So a natural outworking of this is, we say at CPS, is that evangelism is a body ministry, that we all have a part to play. whether we feel like an evangelist or not, you know, we have a part to play in the journeys and next steps of faith that our friends and contacts take. You know, being ready to share our stories or being ready to for faith conversations as they arise, but also praying for people to come to faith. So prayer and evangelism, or prangelism, as I heard Nick Cuthbert once call them, because they go together. You know, there's nothing new, nothing revolutionary, but they are two things that go very easily, you know, can get very easily sidetracked in ministry, both in terms of the priorities of churches, but also the priorities in the lives of us as church leaders.
I mentioned that Holy Trinity Brompton have seen a number of church plants and revitalization projects flourish. From your experience involved in an HGB plant, what were some of the elements to their approach? And how transferable is what you learned to a church that's got limited resources?
I was describing the place and the priority of prayer and evangelism, and church planting is the natural outworking of a culture where there is expectant prayer and where there's a priority on evangelism, because people come to faith, that leads to growth, then there are opportunities to see growth in other areas too. And so in partnership, new churches are started, closed churches are reopened, disciples are, you know, built up and sent out. And that was the case for us at St. Albans in Fulham, that the church building was closed for 6 years. And in partnership with St. Paul's Hammersmith, HDB and the diocese, we reopened it to join in with God's plans for his kingdom in that little part of London during that time. And, you know, the Victorians planted it in the 1800s. So we always said that God really must have wanted a church there because he planted it not once, but twice. You know, but before we planted the church, we needed to build a team. And so it was like throwing out seeds, you know, getting into conversations with people, sharing vision, telling stories, talking about the opportunities, you know, grabbing hold of stories that might ignite hearts. So, and for us, there was a particular one that I remember sharing. There was a mural in one of the sunken basketball courts on one of the estates where the church was located, and it was for a guy called Dean. And he died in a stairwell of one of the flats from an overdose a couple of years before we planted there. We just found that so sad, but also so moving to think, who else might there be out there right now that might need the light of Christ in their lives, like Dean? How can we play a small part in bringing some of God's light and hope to the world? So stories like that grab the hearts of some people. Sharing stats about the needs in the area help grab the minds of other people, and then talking about the opportunities for people to get stuck in working with young people, students, the local community, help grab the hands of other people. I think it's Chris Rogers in his Making Disciples book and resources talks about head, heart, and hands. You know, we're each wired in different ways, and tend to lean towards one or the other of those. And as a church, we tend towards leaning towards one or other of those too. So anyway, we gradually built a team of about 30, and they came together to help restart the church. Then, no surprise that as we relaunched the church, it was natural that prayer and evangelism was just part of what we did. So getting the church to pray for transformation, people to come to know Jesus, but also getting Alpha going. And we talked about stakes in the ground. Alpha was one of those stakes. We ran it 3 times a year at the Alpha course. I personally led and attended those courses as a helper or a leader for those 11 years that I led the church. And partly it models to others, you know, what leaders do with their time communicates to others what we think is a priority, and that will help to shape culture. And then in terms of resourcing it, well, we shared out the cooking between us. We just used the Alpha film series, and I really barely, I mean, barely made a dent in the budget line, but it produced fruit term after term. And sometimes we had one person come to faith, other times more, but the point was having a commitment to running Alpha because it shaped the culture. But also, so there was somewhere to invite, you know, people along who wanted to explore, you know, faith questions further. There's a second stake in the ground, a priority on young people. There was a council youth project that closed around the time we arrived, which meant there was no youth provision in the area, but there was a heart for young people in the congregation and the team. So the church committed to just being present, kicking a football around, and opening up the church hall to connect with young people. And And we applied for some funding through the diocese and was able to find an amazing youth worker who was with us for about 7 years or so after that. And she really helped us take things to a different level, you know, with partnerships with the police, the council, schools. And that led to further funding from Children in Need and others. But it just got me thinking, you know, whether they're a paid team or not, having someone to take a lead on a ministry can be a fine balance. Why do I say that? Well, because people can see them as the youth worker, for example, and so we delegate youth work to that person and they get on with it. But we saw it slightly differently. I saw our youth worker as a prophetic voice in our midst, reminding us of God's heart for the young people in our area. That was the first priority. And as a result, we couldn't ignore that God was at work. And that he wanted us to get involved in supporting working with other strategic partners to offer good youth work, but also the development of a discipleship pathway for those that wanted to explore further. So there are a couple of stakes in the ground. We had a number of others. Those were the important things for us in that season. And it was an opportunity for us to say, let's get behind them, let's pray for them, let's resource them as best we can. And they were some of the key elements.
Yeah, but Matt, you had 30 people join with you. Would that be a kind of minimum number, do you think? Or I mean, you know, your experience of other HTB plants, I don't know what the sort of numbers were.
You know, it really depends on the context. We were you know, local community church, and there were people already, as you said, it was not far from HTB and these other St Paul's, which is just down the road. So there are a lot of people living in that community already who were, you know, who were open to a new adventure and
Okay.
being part of a new plant.
Yeah, excellent. Now, Matt, I've met so many leaders frustrated by the lack of lay leaders. What's your philosophy regarding leadership? Are some churches just lacking the right people? Is it the right development pathway that's missing? How do you see the whole issue as you mix with folk who are having those kind of issues?
Something we teach at CPS is that leadership is complex, messy, and sometimes it's controversial. Now,
Right.
what do I mean by that? Well, it's complex. Steve Croft, he said that true leadership is difficult and complex. The exercise of leadership will stretch us and test us to the limits of what we can bear. So there'll be times when we get it wrong. There'll be times when we're not sure what we're doing. There'll be times when we feel like giving up. There'll be times when leadership just feels like a balancing act. And you know, kind of beware of anyone who suggests that they've got leadership sussed. Leadership is complex. Leadership is also messy because things, you know, rarely go as anticipated. People behave unexpectedly. Illness strikes. Money runs out. You know, pandemic hits. Or you know, I remember thinking so often in the parish. When this particular messy situation calms down, then we can, you know, really get on with what I'm here for and what we're here for.
Yes.
But you know, you come to realize that seeking God in the mess and discerning His grace and redemption is actually the role. And the day probably will never come when you have all your ducks, you know, lined up in a row. And in fact, some research into leading in the most difficult environments. Put leading in the local church as the third most difficult environment in which you can lead,
Right.
because of that messiness and complexity. But we also say that, you know, talk of leadership is sometimes controversial, and some carry real concerns about the language of leadership for, you know, a number of reasons. You know, perhaps concern about the loss of pastoral ministry, concern about sidelining of theological reflection, and an unhealthy reliance on, you know, management or business concepts and approaches, but all of that is understandable. But we say that, you know, it's something we picked up from Graham Tomlin, that rejection is unhelpful because there are lots of great things out there that can help us lead well, but also suspicion is healthy. So we can't just adopt wholesale everything that comes out of the business school and the management theory without a kingdom filter through which we interpret the world. So in fact, holding it with a level of suspicion is no bad thing. Actually, quite aligned with the New Testament, because in the New Testament, the common Greek word for used for leader was archon, and it was never applied to church leaders in the New Testament. And we have such a rich Judeo Christian leadership heritage from which to draw on when it comes to leadership. Old Testament leaders, wisdom literature, history books, the psalmist, the early church, all the greats of church history. And of course, that gives us a historical perspective, a global perspective, and an eternal perspective. So that's something of our approach when we talk about leadership. But it's also true to say that leadership it's plural in the New Testament. It's not a solo pursuit or ministry. And so part of the challenge is a culture that we might have inherited in our churches, where there's this kind of unwritten collaboration almost with the congregation that we lead, that we lead, that says the minister is the head of the church and ministry is located with them. And we even talk about the minister of a church or people going to train for ministry, by which we mean ordained ministry. But the pitfall of that approach, of course, is that rather than the priesthood of all believers, where people are empowered to exercise ministry, those in the body can become consumers or passengers, and those in the head and the leadership can become burnt out. But maybe a better way of picturing is the New Testament way, where Jesus is the head of the body, no one else. Ministry is exercised in the body, and every disciple of Jesus is commissioned in their baptism to be about the mission and ministry of Christ. And so throughout the body, there'll be, those who are gifted as leaders. Some will be recognized, some not. So each plays their part for the building up of the body. And it's true, in some cases, there are just no people, or one or two people, and they have limited resource in terms of time or energy, or capacity. And more often than not, though, there are people in our churches that, with a bit of encouragement and investment, could step into leadership roles. So there's something we can do as leaders to shape a culture where that is normal, the way that we do things around here. But also, as leaders, we have a role to play in shaping a process by which leaders can be identified, they can be invested in, they can be entrusted with leadership responsibility. So I heard that, the true fruit of an apple tree isn't an apple, but another tree. And so it's the same, the true fruit of leadership isn't followers, but other leaders.
Oh, beautifully put, Matt. Thank you. You work as a leadership enabler at CPAS. Give me a bit of background to see CPAS and how they enable leaders across different ministry areas.
Yeah, CPS is an Anglican Evangelical Mission Agency set up in Victorian times by Shaftesbury and others, at a time when there was massive, overseas expansion in mission. And essentially they said, that's great, but let's not neglect the fires of mission in our own country. And CPS was started in 1836 to bring the gospel to every door for the glory of God. And that vision has continued throughout the decades, expressed in different ways. And today there are three core aspects of the work we do. There's leadership development work, which is the work I'm involved with, as we partner with dioceses and church leaders and leadership teams across the country. And as we grapple with questions like, what does it mean to lead in a context like the one we find ourselves in? What does it mean to lead well in collaboration with others? How do we lead sustainably in a way that reflects a marathon, not a sprint? How can we be led more by Jesus, lead more like Jesus, and lead more to Jesus? It's something that we say on the Arrow Leadership Program. But so that's the first aspect. There are two other core aspects of the work we do. There's patronage work. CPS is the largest patron in the Church of England, with almost 700 churches. Which means that we're involved in the appointments process for new clergy. Working with parishes and dioceses to bring new incumbents on board. Then the second, sorry, the third and final core aspect of the work we do is the Ventures and Falcons holidays, which really are phenomenal. There's about 2,000 young people, head off on about 80, up to 80 residential holidays each year, where they have fun, they have games, laughter, but also an amazing opportunity for them to grow in their faith through discipleship, Bible studies, and worship. And it's amazing, especially if you're in a church with a few young people. Churches have this amazing opportunity to send them to Ventures and Falcons, where they meet other kids, they grow in their faith, all at a really economical price. So Really, what we see are leaders being developed at every stage of that pathway, from young people on ventures and falcons to leadership training, becoming incumbents, leaders of patronage churches, all the way to the other end, where that's finding new posts or retiring well too. And so I was thinking of a friend of mine, Alex Koukouris. He's the vicar of St. Paul's Dorking, and he featured on one of our magazines earlier on this year. And he said this: it was on a CPS Venture holiday that I gave my life to Christ when I was 15. He then said, through my 20s, I learned so much about Christian leadership through my involvement in a CPS Venture holiday. And said, I was supported through the CPS Growing Leaders course to explore a calling to leadership, and it shaped my church ministry. And since then, he says, he's gone through numerous CPS training courses, which have been transformative. And he says, I'm now the vicar of a CPS patronage church, and the help and support, particularly at this time, has been invaluable to us. And so that's just one example, but the pathway doesn't always look like that, but we've been investing in leaders at every stage, and it's really exciting to see that.
Great. And I understand you have things coming up in 2025 that would be good to know about.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. It's an exciting period for CPS. It's this year it was 100 years of running Ventures and Falcons Holiday, seeing young people coming to faith and growing leaders, which is amazing. 2025 is another exciting year too, as we celebrate some key milestones of particularly beneficial leadership programs. Thinking of the 25 years of the Arrow Leadership Program. Arrow has, over that 25-year period, has had over 400 attendees, participants. Is for leaders aged 25 to 40 who are already in leadership positions in their church or organization, whether ordained or lay, or at the level of an overall leader. But people who are desiring to be more Christ-like in their leadership, who want to increase their effectiveness, who are wanting to seek to clarify calling and vision, and willing to be challenged and developed and changed. And so that's our 25 years, which is phenomenal to think of that. And then 10 years of PCC Tonight. PCC Tonight, which is an incredible resource to help churches nurture a healthy, functioning church council effectively to focus on what matters most. And of course, that doesn't just happen on its own. It requires some thoughtful, loving, and creative leadership. And so PCC Tonight was created to help church council members when they wake up in the morning of their PCC and think, yes, it's PCC Tonight. So, and we, lots of great feedback comes in and consistently over that 10-year period that it's been around as a resource. And then leading Evangelism Learning Hub. This is a fairly new resource, but one that's being launched again. A new hub's being launched in January. It's designed to help churches nurture a culture of faith sharing, where faith sharing is just a normal and natural part of what we do. And we've been running this for a number of years, and it comes out of about 30 years of thinking and wrestling with evangelism, and this evangelism as a topic and leadership. CPS has been grappling with these topics over about 30 years and more. And another hub begins in January, and it's a 14-month process where churches are given tools to help shape the culture of their church. And just a little sneak peek on that. It's not rocket science, but Prayer for Five. You may have come across that as a simple thing that popularized by the Thy Kingdom Come initiative by the Church of England. It's a simple way of shaping a culture of a church. We just talked about it. When I led a church, we just talked about it for that short period, in the spring summertime. But if churches begin to embed that as a way of what we do around here, praying for five people who don't yet know Jesus, we consistently do that on an individual level as leaders. We embed that in our own lives. That models things to the rest of the church. We embed that in the culture of our church. That really helps to shape a culture. It's a little snippet. But over time, these things embed these things into the life of the church, that it changes the culture. And of course, culture change is measured in months and years rather than days and weeks. But we found them, to be really impactful. And we've had them in back externally impact measured as well, which has shown that they do make a difference. So that's quite amazing.
Oh, wonderful, Matt. Time's almost defeated us, but we're just, I mean, it's an impossible question to answer in a few moments, but the key challenges and opportunities when it comes to leading, as far as you're concerned.
There's nothing new or revelatory in terms of challenges. But when we talk about the key roles of leaders being prayer and thinking, often and often how these things get squeezed out can get squeezed out when we don't place a priority on them. People often resonate with that when we're working with leaders. When we talk about the cycle of grace and the versus the cycle of grief, I think it's Frank Lake's work, and we draw a bit on that, and we teach that when we work with leaders and leading out of a place of acceptance and identity in Christ rather than achievement, in a place where there's busyness and there are expectations, and it can be challenging sometimes. Also, the volume of compliance and administration. Also, loss of confidence in the face of fear and council culture and all that, those kinds of things. But in terms of opportunities, we draw on the Talking Jesus research a lot and share that a lot. It's so encouraging. They released a tranche of research in 2015 and then also 2022. Just one little thing from there: one in three people who have a conversation about Jesus want to either find out more or are open to an encounter with him. And so it's just often about instilling a bit of confidence again on what people, the openness that there is in our society for faith conversations, for connection, for meaning, and these things.
Well, brilliant, Matt. Sadly, time's defeated us. Just time to share the website where people can learn more.
Yes, thank you. It's just at CPS. .org.uk and loads of resources on there. You can find out about events, webinars, other things on there. You can download various things as well. Just have a little route around.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today, and may God bless CPAS in the years to come.
Thanks so much, Andy. It's great to be with you.
It was lovely to meet with Matt Hogg. Matt is the leadership enabler for the CPAS. And as he encourages us to do, go to a website and find out more. Obviously, there's a course that starts in January for 14 months, which you could also be have a chance to sign up for. I was particularly encouraged by his the sense that the importance of lay leadership, the importance of collective leadership, the importance of consultation. And all these things are needed as if we could create a culture where people feel able to give input and be part of what we're doing as a church, then these ideas of one person just doing everything will hopefully fade away. So this is Andy Peck, thanking you for your company and looking forward to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.